Hello and welcome to Not Couple Goals, the podcast where we talk about the best and, let's face it, worst in romantic thriller cinema. I'm your host, Tyler McCarthy, here with my co-host,
Allie Nelson.
Woo!
And for this week / episode, we are doing something extra special for all of you Not Couple Goals fans. This is our first Lifetime movie. And I think Lifetime movies is the soil on which Not Couple Goals is built on, the romantic thriller, cheesy romantic thriller. So this week we've got the 1996 TV movie, Lifetime movie, Lying Eyes. It stars Cassidy Ray, Vincent Irizarry, Allison Smith, and Jamie Rose, and let's also say Ashley Levitch, who plays her best friend. It is directed by Marina Sargenti. It was written by Paul B. Margolis.
Oh, man, this is going to be the most half-hearted spoiler alert I've ever done. But if you have not seen the made-for-TV movie Lying Eyes in 1996, between 1996 and now, consider this your spoiler alert, because we're going to talk about the whole thing.
I mean, who hasn't seen the 1996 TV movie Lying Eyes?
Moving on. Okay. Unfortunately, I think we have to start with a correction up top. Because I don't think this is a Lifetime original movie. I think it was popularized on Lifetime. I think it is of the caliber of the Lifetime movie. But a certain unnamed network that may or may not employ me was the first to broadcast this.
Did I say it was a Lifetime original movie?
No, briefly. You called it a Lifetime movie.
I called it a Lifetime movie. I did not call it a Lifetime original movie.
Okay. Well, I think it's important we draw that distinction for our listeners.
But I'm letting you know it's different. A Lifetime movie is just a movie that appeared on Lifetime.
Okay.
Lifetime, I think, originally started just being, you know, obviously it was a woman's network, but it would show TV movies and then I think that became really popular, like the Amy Fisher-esque, like true crime, Mother May I Sleep With Danger type of movies. And so eventually they started creating their own original movies.
Mother May I Sleep With Danger a movie?
That's one story starring one of our finest actors of the generation above us, Tori Spelling.
Okay. Okay. Well, this... I also think it's important just for context for the listener to know that we're recording this the Tuesday after the Oscars, which were on Sunday, and we spent our weekend catching up on the Best Picture nominees. So this weekend, we watched, what did we watch? We watched Oppenheimer. We watched Anatomy of a Fall. We watched Killers of the Flower Moon. The most recent podcast episode we did was Poor Things. And we also this weekend watched...
The Oscars themselves
and Lying Eyes, which was such a steep decline.
Part of why I wanted to choose it, though, is I thought that it would be funny to, instead of doing like an Oscar movie, just like doing the most Lifetime-y thing possible.
Agreed. We've done Saltburn recently. We did Poor Things, as I said. And now here we are, finally, after almost 2 years of doing this podcast, I think.
Yeah.
We've done it. We've hit Lifetime movie, and I couldn't be. There's no one else I would have liked to have gone on this journey with, Allie, than you.
But okay.
You're welcome. But okay, so let's talk about. Let's open with our first segment, which is what we both expected from this movie going in. Now, you were aware of this movie, so I assume you've got a story to tell. I was sitting next to you on the couch last night, and you said, let's do Lying Eyes. I said, sure, and then you fired up.
That's not how I said it.
How did you say it?
I said, we're watching Lying Eyes.
That's right. And then you, raised the back of your hand toward me, and I cowered.
No, I was very excited by it, and I yelled, we're watching Lying Eyes, and I immediately went to find it on streaming, which it is. It is streaming on Amazon Prime currently, so if you have a Prime membership, you can watch it there. It's also on Freevee and on Tubi, so clearly there's a lot of people looking for ways to watch Lying Eyes, and you know what?
For free.
The people have given it to us. No, you can also buy it on Amazon if you so choose.
There also is a robust DVD market for it, like eBay, DVD market for it.
I'm not surprised. I have it on my IMDb watch list because I wanted to watch it. And so it knew to let me know when it was available on streaming, and streaming delivered.
Yeah. So I need you to tell me why had you heard of this movie? What is your relationship to this movie? Explain yourself.
So when I was about, like, I would imagine, I think 13, because we were in the basement of the house that I am currently in right now, which is my parents' house. And they moved here when I was about 13. So
we're separated physically, but not relationship wise.
Oh, and I suppose I moved here too when I was there. They didn't move to a new house without me. They brought me.
Once they finally let Allie in the new house.
As I was 13. So Jana, my childhood best friend, and I were in the basement, which was like my place to be. And we were just flipping channels because it was before the age of streaming. I'm not going to say exactly when it was, but it was before the age of streaming. So you were at the mercy of whatever happened to be on cable, and we were flipping channels and honestly just happened upon this movie. And you know, because you know, at that age, like, you're looking for something that you're maybe not supposed to be watching, and there was like a seediness to it that we like saw. You see it from the first moment of this movie. There was like a seediness to it, and so we were like, oh yeah, we'll watch this. And like at the time, I had heard of Lifetime movies. But so this was, I think, probably my first real foray, other than like maybe walking in and like catching like tail ends of stuff with my mom. But like, my mom wasn't like a huge Lifetime movie person. But I ended up watching this movie as like my entry into Lifetime movies with Jana, and highly enjoying it, being like, this was like ironically enjoying it, not like being like, oh my God, yeah. Like
even at 13 or wait, how old were you?
Yeah, about 13.
Even so at 13, you were ironically watching.
Yeah, I mean, because it's cheesy. So we were like, this is great. And, you know, the main character's a teenager. We were teenagers. We were like, this is awesome. Ha ha. It's very cheesy and stuff. So I almost feel like in a way it like ruined all other Lifetime movies for me, though, because it was such a strong entry. And then there's so many that are boring. So, and you're like, oh my God, stop like crying over your glass of wine at the kitchen table and just like do something or murder someone. Either get murdered or get to murdering. And this one, I feel like it's so short and cheesy, and like it delivers what you really want in a lot of these sort of trashy made for TV movie, like romantic thrillers. So I think it delivered exactly. It really didn't deviate from what I expected it to be. There were not a lot of twists and turns despite the movie trying. And yeah, I mean, that's sort of what I thought going in. I was like, well, it lays it out pretty easily in the first scene, I feel like.
Hello, I'm Daniel Cohen, former film editor of thepopbreak.com, and I've got a Batman podcast for you. We discuss Batman's past, present, and future, and do a lot of rankings episodes. Yes, we rank the movies, villains, but that's not all. We even rank all the Batman movie trailers throughout history. Yes, we rank Batman trailers. I dare you to find another Batman podcast that did that. So join me and frequent hosts Alex Marcus and Bill Bakken, as well as a plethora of Bat guests, as we discuss Batman and plenty of DC on film as well. Also, fair warning, I'm a BVS fan, but don't let that scare you away. Trust me, I get mocked and ridiculed more than the Martha line for taking that stance. So relax and tune in on the last Tuesday of every month on the Pop Break Today feed.
Hey, it's Bill Bodkin, editor-in-chief of thepopbreak.com. Join myself, Amanda Rivas, Al Manarino, and a cavalcade of awesome guests on the socially distanced podcast, the flagship podcast of thepopbreak.com.
And it's Amanda Rivas. If you're a pop culture obsessed nerd like we are, then you need to make socially distanced an integral part of your life. We talk all the things, Marvel, Star Wars, you know, everything on Disney Plus pretty much, as well as the hottest trending shows and news in the world of pop culture.
This is definitely Al Manarino and not Bill Bodkin. So listen to the Socially Distanced podcast every Friday on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all your favorite podcast platforms. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe so we can eventually get Disney Plus to give us advertising money. Please, we could use the money. I have children.
Well, so that's what, you know, we were both when I got from Lying Eyes, I really thought it was going to be I don't know. I thought it would have something to do with eyes. I don't know why.
Did you not get that it was like a romantic thriller?
I got it was a romantic thriller, but like it's called why is this movie called Lying Eyes?
Because they just took lying because there's lying in it. And then I think they just like rolled a dice or something. And they were like lying. What's the noun dice say? Eyes. Okay. Lying eyes. Yeah, because lying feet was taken. Like, it's like, it doesn't have anything to do with, I mean, there's a lot of lying, so it could have just been called lying, or the dude who lies a lot. Like, it just would have been fine.
Okay. Well, so basically, when I read the synopsis and was like, okay, so it's a, you know, sort of May-December romance kind of situation, and then things go awry. What?
It's a statutory, barely not statutory rape.
Yeah. It's the story, we're going to call him a child predator because no one in this movie does. He gets no comeuppance.
He does not. But her mom does a little bit try to be like, listen, dude, like, come on. Like, you're a child predator.
Without saying any of the words.
Yeah. It's still like a 1996 movie.
That's true, I guess. But like, I don't know. Like, based on her age, she was like, should have been worried about stranger danger. Like, 2 years prior?
No, like a month prior, because we get to her and she has just turned 18. Yeah. And I was thinking during the movie too, like, I was thinking about how 18, like they, when they changed the drinking age from 21 to 18, they changed it back to 21 because the prevailing thought was like, okay, who 18-year-olds hang out with is different than who 21-year-olds hang out with. If you make it 18, 18-year-olds are able to buy, like a lot of them are still in high school, they're able to buy like high schoolers alcohol. So a lot more high schoolers were able to drink.
Right.
But the fact that the age of consent is 18, like in most places, like sometimes it's like 16. There's weird legalities too that I don't fully understand. Why is the same not true for 18? Like, it's one thing it's still gross to me for an adult, like a full grown real adult, to be hitting on like a college age person, but at least a college age person is like out of their house. But like 18-year-olds, a lot of them are in high school. So maybe we should be thinking about 18 not really being a great age of consent.
He's 33. I'm about to turn 33 at the end of this month. And the idea of a date telling me that they're grounded is such a turn off.
Telling you like what colleges they're applying to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or even just being in a cheerleader outfit. I know it's supposed to be like a sexual fantasy, but absolutely not. If you have a Letterman's jacket and you're our age, no thank you.
Or you're having to be like, oh, I had to lie to my mom to get out to meet you for this date. It's like, ugh.
Yeah. Date her mom.
Yeah. Her mom was hot.
Yeah. Well, he's a perv. He likes him young. So
oh, he's definitely clearly.
And like ditches them the second they're college age too.
Yeah, he's gross.
As we'll find out. But before we're getting ahead of ourselves here, because Allie, I want you to give those who ignored our spoiler alert and are just here to hear us talk, or those who saw this movie, refuse to rewatch it for this podcast, I understand, and
shame
just
on.
Want to recap. Shame on you, she says. Can you please give us a brief recap of what this movie is about? And presumably this is going to be your magnum opus.
Well, this movie is tells you what it's about basically from the first scene. We open
but not from the title. Lying Eyes is a hard no.
Title doesn't make it's just really the dude who likes him young and lies a lot. which is basically my synopsis. Like first scene, we see cheerleaders, one in particular that is too mature looking to be like an actual cheerleader. Like we definitely have like a 25-year-old woman playing a cheerleader, but 18-year-old cheerleader, they're doing their thing. And then there's some like 90s TV movie handsome dude in his 30s with no child there, no connection to the school, watching the cheerleaders go on at halftime at this basketball game with like a creepy perv face. And Bob's your uncle. He arranges to rear end her with his car. Probably the other way too.
I was keeping a straight face. I wasn't going to touch that one.
In order to initiate a meeting, and then does the creepy thing that you would imagine would happen in a Lifetime movie or just in things in the 90s, where he seduces this 18-year-old, they date, and then it turns out, oh my God, big twist, he's married and has kids. What? And then she's the main girl, Blondie McCheerleader girl, gets a lot of death threats and like some really low budget death murdery attempts. And we don't know who's trying to kill her. Is it the Lion Eyes dude? Is it his wife? Is it someone else? Ooh. But yeah, it's mostly about how this 18-year-old gets like seduced by this older man who's lying a lot.
Yeah. And is being stalked by someone.
Yeah. Someone who just really only goes to the school locker room, like one of two places that we see her. They just go to the school locker room and they're like, you suck. Not a lot of like threatening murderiness.
Well, there's only one, but it is like out of nowhere where she's suddenly like, I warned you. Now I'm going to fucking kill you.
I mean, she does escalate pretty far. Like it goes from like leaving mean notes to like cutting up she cuts up her shirt. That was like a gift from him. And then she like just like leaves a lot of like mean notes. Like one of them, I wanted to ask you about this because it seems like a lot of trouble and almost like a welcome thing where she left a note in the mom's mailbox saying like your daughter is a whoring slut, which also full A, slut shaming, B, redundant.
Very.
Like your daughter's a slut. Like it doesn't make sense to say a whoring slut or say she's a whore. Like you don't need both.
A whoring slut implies like an enterprise or implies an enterprise there. Like she's whoring, meaning literally she's selling her body for money. And then she's a slut, meaning she enjoys it, which again, not to slut shame, but that is not what's happening. It is an inaccurate note.
Yeah. It doesn't make a lot of sense, but, along with the ransom note style note, she also leaves a nice brand new set of like lingerie, like a bra, like expensive looking bra and panties. And the girl like brings it to like the slumber party she goes to, and one of her friends makes the joke of like, well, at least she got your size right. And it's like, so did she leave you a gift? Like, it's like, it was confusing.
That's, I thought she stole a gift that what's his name gave her.
No, because one of the girls says, at least she got your size right.
Well, then the note is mean, but the gift is nice. I feel like your stalker kind of breaks even in that regard. Like, you're a whoring slut. Here's a gift.
Here's something you can use to seduce the guy that I'm angry at. You're sleeping with this guy. I'm angry you're sleeping with him. Here's something.
Here's some hot lingerie for him.
Something sexy to wear. Like, it didn't make any sense. It was like, also, yeah, it was like, it didn't make any sense to me that you would give that. It's not like, it's one thing if you took her lingerie, like you're in the locker room all the time, stalker. We know this because that's where you do most of your menacing. So like, why not steal her actual bra and underwear and like cut it up and then leave that in the mailbox with the note? Like, it doesn't make sense to be like, your daughter's a slut, and then leaving like, here, use this. Like, I didn't get where that, I know she's crazy, but I don't get where that is from.
Maybe she tried to steal her actual like lingerie and then just kind of quit and was like, fuck it, I'm just going to go buy some.
I guess. She's like, remember these?
So then it escalates from there. I forget what's next. Is the sauna next?
No, I think the next one is when Amy. Amy's the main girl. Amy Miller. Her mom is always like half out the door whenever she tries to speak with her. And her mom is like, oh, I'm a realtor and I'm late to show another house, but I'm at this one house. And so Amy's like, well, here, I'll show the house for you. And then,
oh, right.
Here's like weird things. And you would think like, cause like there's all of these furniture, like basically like mannequin sized furniture covered in sheets. And you think at one point she's going to get like attacked by one of them, which would have been pretty scary.
Yeah.
And know, like, she just finds a knife has been jammed into, like, the headboard of one of the beds in the house that she's supposed to be showing for her mom, with a picture of her mounted on the guy.
Yeah.
So, like, of her,
having,
you know,
their illicit affair.
And she runs from that. But to me, I'm like, A, you cannot leave that photo. Like, A, somebody went, and this is 96, somebody went and got this photo of you developed. So that's a whole nother level of creepy.
That's true.
And also, the person at the 1 hour photo place wasn't like, hey, you can't get these developed. Like, that's messed up. Like, this, I think this is illegal.
I feel like the unspoken rule of, like, a 1 hour photo place is that, like, you see a lot of fucked up shit and your threshold for when you report it to the police has to be low. Like, I feel like there has to be, like,
this was clearly funny. Somebody watching other people boning, taking a bit like picture from the window. I would report that, but or at least have a talking to them.
That's a good way to get your 1 hour photo booth with a reputation, if you know what I mean.
For being just.
Quick story, actually. My parents, when I was a kid, they had like a disposable camera that I think they used for like either me or my brother's like concert at school, like a Christmas concert where all the classes had to go sing a song or something like that. It was like some nice event and there were photos left and my brother and I were like playing with the camera. And at one point, I think I was just like mooning my brother. We were little kids too. And I was mooning my brother and he like thought it would be funny to take a photo. And my mom like came in and was like, did you take a photo of your brother like mooning the camera? Because she kind of saw what was happening from the living room. And my brother was like, yeah. And she was like, we can't develop this film now. I'll go to jail.
That's not true, though. Like,
there's a photo of a child's butt on there. That would.
I have photos of like multiple cousins' butts because
she would have some explaining to do.
No, you wouldn't. People take photos of their kids in the bathtub. Like, you gotta, like, you know.
This I was like bent over, like butt cheeks agape, mooning my brother.
I'm letting everyone know you can get those developed. I have photos of people mooning from when I was a kid.
We did, and I'm pretty sure she burned that entire camera.
Yeah, your mom was a little too paranoid. But so the other thing I think
get it, Mom. I love you.
So Amy leaves the picture up. She also leaves the knife. Like, if you think that somebody is threatening you and, like, is in the house, they've left you a weapon perfectly. Like, go take the knife out of the headboard, take the photo, and now you got a knife. Like, you're so much better off.
Yeah. She did take the knife. She took the photo down, but then I don't know what she did with it.
No, she didn't take it. She just ran out of the room.
Are you sure? I thought I remembered her taking it down.
Because I was like,
to like look at the photo up close. She didn't?
No, she just like left both of them. Because I remember turning to you being like, because like she runs into the couple that wants to look at the house. And I'm like, she has to take down that photo.
That's
like
true.
Surreptitiously while she's trying to show the house.
You're right. It was a missed opportunity. You really thought they did, like, there was an implied person like draped in something.
But then you get the POV from the person and they're actually not behind her.
Exactly. So the whole stalking subplot was just not very good.
Well, and it was also funny to me, like, because she does get like stuck in the sauna. Like, she's in a, you know how your high school had a sauna in the locker room?
Of course.
We all did.
And then after hours, you're allowed to go in by yourself, completely unsupervised. Yeah. We've all been to high school.
So she's in the sauna, and then the temperature gets turned up to max, and she and her friend later on are talking about it, being like, that person tried to kill you. And it's like, why would the school sauna, like, say, let's say the school has a sauna. Why would the school sauna have a temperature on it that could potentially, why could it be raised to the point of where it would kill the students?
Well, there's also,
that makes no sense.
The max was like 140 degrees, which I don't think would kill someone.
No, we just watched that Conan O'Brien, Stephen Young special where they went to the Korean spa and there was a sauna you'd go into that was 213 degrees.
Yeah, so I don't think it would like cook them, but the implication is that it might make you pass out and then like dehydrate or something like that. But like, how long would she have to? That's a long way to die. That presumably a coach or someone would be able to come in. But you know who comes in and rescues her?
Creepy Mick, liar.
Creepy Mick, 33-year-old, who's again able to walk into the girls' locker room of a high school where he does not have a child, and no one stops him.
And he's aided by the janitor. Like, he's like, the janitor told me you were still here. And it's like, dude, the janitor shouldn't be telling guys like, oh yeah, there's a lone defenseless hot cheerleader in the girls' locker room.
She's in the ladies' locker room. Here, take my key. I'm from Brooklyn.
So I don't understand why the sauna has a murder student's mode and why everyone was acting like it was like a murder attempt, because it was just the hottest that the sauna goes up to. Like, it wasn't like when Michael Myers like murders somebody in Halloween 2 by like turning up the temperature all the way. Like, it's a sauna. Like, a sauna should not be, does not usually have a killing mode.
Here's the other thing that kind of huffed my chicken about that whole scene too, which was they didn't explain how the door was locked at all.
Yeah.
Because if it's a glass door, and presumably it doesn't have a lock, especially from the outside.
Yeah.
So, because
high schoolers are notoriously nice to each other. Nobody would ever bully somebody else by locking them in.
Do a scene where she, like, ties a towel on the, like, thing or something like that. But instead, it just seemed like Amy, our main girl, just, like, was struggling with the door because it was just so hot.
And so I also, we skipped a little bit over the fact, this movie opens with the weird scene, but then the first scene of Amy with her mom really disturbed me and bothered me. It's Amy is, we join Amy mid-conversation or one-sided conversation, as most of them are, with her mom, where she's telling her mom, like, and we have like four female students with allegations against them. They all were willing to go on record about that, you know, about the teacher and the sexual harassment that's going on. And the principal still won't let us put it in the paper. Like, talk about a violation of free speech. And it's like, oh my God, 96 is so bonkers. Like, I mean, yes.
I want to watch that movie.
Well, but so A, this is so, there's so many things wrong with this school. One, there was a teacher clearly like predatory on girls, sexually harassing them.
Yes.
At least four students have come forward that are willing to go on record. So, you know, there's more. The principal, not only do people know about it to the point of where like there's been like an article about it, the principal is silencing them and the teacher is presumably still at the school. And so that's all horrible about the school, but Amy's mom is not listening. That's the thing that bothered me. So she's like, I gotta go, sweetie. And she's like, mom, are you literally is like, mom, are you listening? And she's like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm just really late. And it's like, oh my God, she's telling you that there is a teacher that is being predatory on the female students, that the school is doing nothing about it. The principal is silencing them. And you're just like, la, 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 like, have
fun. And the janitor's giving away locker room keys. It's here, real quick for the listener, just in case they need a refresher. Do you want to role play a typical conversation between the mother and the daughter? I'll be the daughter. Here we go. Mom, I really need to talk to you on the way inside. I was stabbed by a stranger and I'm currently, my palm is the only thing holding my intestines within my body.
Wait, you're here? I'm sorry, I'm late. I gotta go.
And scene. Well done. Well done, Allie. That was great. Yeah. The mom couldn't be bothered to be a mom the whole movie until finally she, like, just starts.
There's, like, eight scenes of Amy trying, like, because once she figures out that she's the guy's mistress, she does try and end it with him, but then he does the thing that all dudes do in the situation where they lie and it's like, oh, my marriage is going to end. I'm going to leave her for you, blah, blah, blah. And she, you know, believes him because she's 18.
Wait,
and
there is a moment in that movie that I wrote down. I don't mean to keep interrupting you, but I can't let this moment go by because it was so funny to me. He said, where is it? Oh, he says to her, I couldn't tell. He's talking about being married and she's found out. And he goes, I couldn't tell you because I was afraid that I would lose you. Like, yeah. That's kind of the whole point of a secret. When you don't tell someone something unflattering to trick them into staying with you, that's not like a reason you give why you did the thing.
Yeah, this is not a good reason to like convince her to, oh my God, that changes everything. I'm not mad at all. No,
I didn't want to tell you I was convicted for murder because I was worried you'd look at me like a murderer.
But so she keeps back and forthing where she wants to not be in the relationship. Then he tries to like confuse her and blah, blah, blah. But during this period of time, she tries to tell her mom like five times. She keeps being like, mom, I have something I really need to tell you. And her mom's like, oh, I gotta go, honey. I'm really late to show this house, which like, lady, like you got to just be more on time, first of all.
Mom,
and then,
mom, I found this bomb in the garage and it says like there's only 10 seconds left.
I'm really
left.
Late to show this house, honey.
Oh, okay. It can wait.
It's constant. And then she eventually tries to like get mad at her daughter for being late. And it's like, well, how do you know when she's coming in the house? Cause you never talk to her. She has no rules. And so her mom, when she finally does tell her, like, I've been having an affair with a married man, she's like, you know, tells her about the murder attempts and stuff. And she's really worried about her daughter. And at one point she says, like, why didn't you tell me before? And it's like, she tried. When did you think she would have had time to tell you before? When you were the streak of blonde she saw running from her out of the house. Like, there's no way she could have told you.
But like, you want to hate on the mom until the daughter finally like blows up on her. And, like, does it in a really unfair way. She mentions while her 33-year-old pedophile boyfriend is, like, sound asleep, she pours her heart out about her dad being like, oh, yeah, he, like, liked his psych students, and eventually he ran off with one, and he left us, and we haven't seen or heard from him since. And then you realize that she's been, like, raised by a single mom who's a realtor who keeps them, like, you know, pretty well off. She's got her own car. They're in this like affluent neighborhood. And then she's just like, oh, you dad would still be here if you hadn't driven him away. And it's like, you little piece of shit.
Yeah. What did she say with your like constant manipulation or nagging? Something like that. Something like cliche. Yeah. I got where she had somewhat of a right to be like, you can't ground me. Like, what are you talking about? You're never here.
Yeah.
I understood that because like, yeah, her mom wasn't like a very involved mom, but when she did try to be like you sent dad away because you suck. Like I was like, okay, young lady, you do not talk to your mother that way. Like that was so uncalled for.
She even said that. She was like, I'm your mother. You don't ever speak to me that way again. And I remember when my parents would say something like that, I'd be like, in the back of my head, I'd be like, I'm probably going to speak to you like that again. But it was the language of like, don't ever say that again, that I remember being like, okay, I think I maybe went too far on this one.
I was actually like, I didn't ever really get that from my parents because I wasn't that kid. Like I never did that. I was not the kid that like swore at their parents ever. I never was like, I hate you. It was very rare that I argued with them. And when I did argue with them, I was never like disrespectful because I always knew, I think I was like such a people pleaser that I didn't want them to ever dislike me. And I always knew like, you can't take certain things back. And I would see like, maybe my siblings say things to my parents that were really like, oh my God, you called mom a bitch. And like, you can't take that back. Like you can apologize, but she has that memory of you doing that for the rest of her life. And yeah. I never wanted to like be the person that was like doing that to their parents. I always knew like, I don't want them to have that memory, and you cannot like apologize enough for that. So I don't have any memories of that with my parents.
Yeah. I don't think I ever called my mom a bitch because yeah, that was a big no, but mom, if you're out there, if you're listening, love you, bitch.
How dare you? Your mother's a lovely
I woman. Hope she doesn't listen to this. she will not find that funny. I love you, mom. You're the best. I want to ask about a question I particularly had for you. Was there was a moment where she goes and she wants to get her bracelet repaired, and she realizes that her boyfriend
that looks like it was from Claire's, not a tennis bracelet.
And she realizes that her incredibly uncreative pedophile boyfriend, older boyfriend, he's uncreative and he buys in bulk. He presumably, we find out later this isn't the case, but bought one for her and his wife.
That's like a trope in these movies too, for some reason. Like this is definitely not the first that I've seen where that's been the downfall of the guy, where it's obviously having an affair. Cause he's like, buy two of the same necklace, but engrave one with Mary and one with Lucy. And then make sure you don't accidentally send it to the wrong one.
You know who this tactic would have worked for though? I thought about this when we were watching Alan Rickman in Love Actually. Just spring for the second bracelet, man.
Necklace.
But I mean, obviously step one, don't cheat on your wife. But if you're going to do it, spring for the second bracelet. Anyway, that's what this guy's got on Alan Rickman. But anyway, she figures out that he's married. She goes and she discovers she goes to his house, which is helpfully labeled the Bradshaw's out front. There's a plaque on the front of the house.
Who would do that? That is the most unsafe thing you can do, is to have, because it's not even like, it's like they're, you know, some people have like personalized welcome mats or something. This is on the street, like not even on the house, like on the street by like at like where their mailbox is. It's like, here's the Bradshaws. Yeah. Like, especially if you're having affairs and like having affairs with people and like somebody's getting murdery about it. You do not want to be like, hey, Derek Bradshaw, the cheater, lives here. Say hi to Derek.
There was a time when like our home had like the address partially obscured and you could still read the address, but I do remember thinking, you know what, I like that. The people we want over here know where we live.
Yeah.
But my mom always said too, like, we weren't allowed to have our name like monogrammed on our backpack because she was worried that a kidnapper was going to come up and be like, hey, Tyler. And like, I know your name. Like, here's some candy. Like I wanted to say Tyler McCarthy candy lover on my back, but she didn't want that. But anyway, I digress.
No, I mean, like, my mom always said don't get vanity plates because she was worried that somebody, you know, she said that that's an easy way for people to get followed.
Anyway, I keep getting distracted. So she goes to the house. She sees his family, his wife, and she realizes she's been having an affair. This guy's been lying to her. He's a married man.
Not just his eyes. With his mouth, too. He's been saying lies. He's been just straight up telling lies. But his eyes are lying, too. Like,
God damn it.
Eyes and mouth. More apt title for this movie.
Yeah, that sure would be. I can't believe that one got left on the cutting room floor.
Yeah, I'm honestly surprised they didn't call it that.
The question I have for you is, do you tell the wife? And if so, how? Obviously, you don't go running out of the car up to her and her children and be like, I'm fucking your husband. But like, what? When do you tell the wife, if at all? And like, how? How do you like navigate this situation?
You know, I have wondered this before, just because I'm an extraordinarily honest person. Like, I don't believe in lying. I don't. And, you know, the only lies I'll tell is like, if somebody's like, do I look fat in this? And there's no reason, like, if they're going to buy something, I'll say like, maybe that's not the most flattering, but like, I'll tell white lies to be nice to people. Like, I never want to hurt someone's feelings, but like, I don't believe in lying at all in general. I do think it's the cause of like some of the most issues in this world and like definitely interpersonal issues. So I do tend to, you know, like if the teacher found something that had been broken in school and was like, hey, who broke this? If it was me, I was always the kid that was like, yeah, you know what? Straight up. It was me. I broke that. I'm sorry. So I don't know how I would handle this. Like if I started dating someone, then it turned out they were married. And then I guess, like, I don't know how I would handle that. Because, like, I have been in a situation before where, like, somebody's reached out to me to, like, try and get me to go out with them. And then it turns out they were married. And I've been like, excuse me. I've noticed, like, it was, like, an ex or something. And it's like, hey, you're reaching out, asking me on a date. But I can see your wedding photos on your page. And they seem recent. Like, so it's clear you're married. And I haven't reached out to the wife then because it feels like, I don't know. I just like, you're blowing up somebody's life, but is it the right thing to do to reach out and tell that person? Like probably, but it feels like a dicey situation.
It's also like not necessarily waters you need to be wading into just because someone like reached out to you on Facebook Messenger or something.
Yeah. But also like if I was in her position where she's like getting these death threats and she thinks they're from the wife. And even if, you know, like the advice she gets is even if it's not the wife, like this will end the relationship because he won't leave you alone. I suppose you should tell her. I guess you should go to the house and try and tell her that way. Or I don't know, maybe a call is better. But like the wife, like the wife was weird when she met her the first time and was like, hey, come have dinner with us. And she was like, really? No. And then the wife was like, come sit with us. No is not an answer. And then she was like, I don't believe in divorce, Amy. Did you know that? Did you know I don't believe in divorce? And it's like, she just
met you. Yeah, she knows. I love she was like, yeah, I don't believe in divorce. Like, out of nowhere, do you believe in divorce? And then, like, the very next scene is Amy with her friend being like, I think she knows. Like, yeah, she knows. She also said, I clocked this too. She said, oh, my husband did say you're still at Franklin High. You don't add the word still in there unless you're like, yeah, she's young.
Oh, yeah. And she's also, like, wrapping her arms and, like, basically her legs around her husband and is like, well, I don't believe in divorce. I'll never let this one go, especially because of what divorce does to kids. And it's, like, so weird.
For so much of the movie, she's painted as, like, the stalker, murdery villain, the scorned wife that we love so much in these movies. And she's not. She's just a woman with, like, maybe too much patience and love for her man who eventually gets fed up.
Well, yeah. And I mean, so Amy tries to go about it by like going to her house, and then the woman is like, oh, do you want to come in? And she's like, no, this is fine. And it's like, if you're trying to tell her about the affair, I don't think standing in the doorway is the way to do it. Like, I don't necessarily think you should go in because there are kids there. Maybe you say, hey, would you mind coming outside? And I really need to talk to you. Can you come out for a walk with me or something? Because she handles it so weirdly by being like, no, I'll just stay out here. It's like, so you're planning on just telling her in the doorway and then turning around and leaving? Like, that doesn't make any sense.
And then she chickens out and she thinks it's an acceptable lie to be like, I just came all the way over to your front door to tell you I really enjoyed our very, very weird conversation at the Italian restaurant the other night. And hey, if you're a toddler-aged kids ever want to talk about colleges, which I have not applied for yet.
No, high school. She says, like, because she had said, my kids are high school. I want to talk to you about high school. And then the next time she's like, so, yeah, if you ever wanted to talk about high school, like how you said you wanted to, that's why I drove to your house. Weird that I know where you live. Okay, bye.
Like, well, it's labeled.
Well, I know, but
it's not hard to find.
You'd only know that if you drove by it. Like, you still have to know what area to go to.
I know where the Bradshaws live in this neighborhood because their house is just so labeled. It makes it easy.
Yeah, that's right.
I know where all the families live because everyone labels their home, of course.
Exactly.
So you think this is a phone call?
I think it depends on the situation you're in. If it's like, if it's a friend, maybe you have a talk, like you have to have that talk in person. If it's a weird situation of like you're 18 and the guy is like a married lawyer and the wife has already been like creepily like, I don't believe in divorce, Amy. Maybe it's a phone call.
Yeah. And you kind of gotta, or like take her to an arts and crafts night and be like, hey, so if you had to craft a letter without using your handwriting, what would you do?
Or you try and play hangman. Or you invite her to Words with Friends and you just do a lot of like really pointed ones.
This is 96. His big flirtation was getting her a new radio for her car and a couple Hootie and the Blowfish CDs.
And then, yeah, and he's like the one from Hootie and the Breadfish. And she's like, it's Hootie and the Blowfish.
Yeah, like, oh, Jared. Can't you read? Why would you think it's Breadfish, you fucking
I don't think
idiot?
So too. Also, you're 33, not 60. Like, yeah. you have a radio and like you've probably heard "All I Want to Be With You." Remember that one?
Yeah, like I'm 33 and I'm not here with the kids being like, "Oh, that Duo Lipo song, am I right?" Like, no. You've heard. There's a thing called pop culture, you old fart.
Yeah.
Let's talk about him a little. Is he attractive?
So I was thinking this in the he's like the perfect man to be cast in this role. He's like 1990s.
Before you explain yourself, that seems scathing.
That is he has a smarmy late 1990s TV movie attractiveness. Like, yeah, I mean, if you saw this guy in like a Sears catalog, you'd be like, he's a handsome guy. He's like modeling Sears stuff. But
you'd also be like, that dude likes him young.
Well, but I think he worked well in his like creepiness. Like Like he did a leeringness that worked well for the role. He may be a very nice man in real life and may not have any of that quality in real life, but I remember thinking like this actually like was well cast, because like she seemed like young and beautiful, and he did seem like, you know, if I were 18 and that guy was hitting on me, I would have totally fallen for it too. Like it wouldn't have been a lot to sweep me off my feet at 18. Like you just would have had to have been nice to me. And the fact that he's taking her to like candlelit dinners and buying her like leather jackets and tennis bracelets and all of this stuff and giving her the keys to his beach house. Like, yeah, I get totally that kind of stuff works on teenage girls all the time. There's a reason that this is like a trope and it's disgusting, but
in the beginning, it opens with her doing that like classic. It was more of a thing in the 90s, but it is also a trope too of like all the girls in the locker room are sitting around talking about how the boys are just so immature. I hate boys our age and all that. And so it is like very potent for her, I bet, to have this like guy with his shit together who's able to buy her stuff, like court her.
Yeah. The way that he's like, she's like, do you mind that I'm in high school? And he's like, no, do you mind that a 33-year-old lawyer is feeding you dessert? And it's like, yes, yes, I mind.
And someone else in the restaurant should mind.
Yeah, I know. It's gross.
Like, yeah, that everything he does is very public. Like, I guess it's maybe a big town, but like, I was surprised at how often he was willing to just like be out at dinner with her, send a limo to her high school for her, things like
but
that.
But he was making her, because she points out at one point, like, you always take us to out of the way places. Like, am I just your mistress? So I think we're led to believe that that's not like a public restaurant, you know, right. like a restaurant that's maybe in the next town or something. Because the thing that she doesn't seem to notice, though, is that, like, he's so stupid that he's like, oh, let's go to my beach house. Say that's your regular house, dude, because she should get suspicious eventually that you have to take her to your real house.
You're so right. That's so smart. Yeah. Like, oh, man, you'd be good at having a mistress. I've always said that.
I mean, all the ladies, they want a piece.
Excuse you, ladies. I get it, but watch it. I also felt like the gifts he buys her, he starts with the bracelet, right? That's the first one.
He pimps her ride.
Right. Then it's the bracelet. Then the second or third, depending on how you look at it, gift, because the first one, he like hit her car. We learn later, probably on purpose, but he hit her car and then like repaired it better than it was before. So I guess you can call that a gift. Then it's the bracelet. Then second date, second gift, like the skimpiest corset lingerie. And yeah, that's like, a big swing. That's a big so kind of gross swing.
It was, and it's white too. So it's like this like weird, innocent, like, it's so, when she opens that gift and it is their second date and he has given his 18-year-old date, who's still in high school, this fucking white corset with white panties. And it's so gross. Like, if I were her, I would have been so upset at that. It's so forward and just like smarmy. And like, so if you do want to date a young girl, like, you would think that you wouldn't like be that forward so early on to like terrify her. And then when she's sort of like, he's like, oh, we can take it as slow as you want. Like, why don't you try it on? And I'll just hold you. And it's like, stop telling her to try it on, motherfucker. Like, you're so gross.
Even an age-appropriate relationship, it feels like on the second date to be like, here, I got you some lingerie. Which lingerie is usually a gift for the gift giver, if we're being honest. And for it to be like on the second date of just like, yeah, I want to fuck you now, is like so gross. She's too young to realize it's indicative of someone who does not like her as a person, but as a body.
I do think at 18, I would have like probably felt pressured to be like, oh, this guy's sweeping me off my feet. And like, you know, wouldn't have known how to react to it. Cause you also don't want to seem too young. Like, oh, maybe this is how adults date. So like, if I don't, you know, do this, then I he's going to be like, oh God, she's such a high schooler.
Yeah.
But like, you would also, I don't know. It was just, that was so gross. And like, yeah, it would be,
he's a predator.
Like, it would be so poorly received in an adult relationship. Like, if on a second date, a man like had the gall to fucking give me lingerie, I would have been so furious. I would have taken the gift still, because you know what? I'm still going to get mine. He will never see it on me. I will now have new lingerie for the next person I date. So thank you. Thanks for the gift, but this interaction is done and I'm kicking you in the balls. Like, so fucking rude.
That's my girl. So let's talk about, because you laughed at me. Let's talk about when that lingerie comes up again. Because you laughed at me again. You're currently laughing at me.
You can be so slow.
Hang on. I have my reasons. For the listener.
No, you don't.
I do. Oh, okay. All right. All right. This order. Order in my courtroom.
Talk out loud. Be your confusion out loud. When the average Lifetime audience got this so immediately.
Hang on, everyone. Now, here's what happens. We're going to get to the big twist. The big twist is that the sister of Amy's best friend, who she's an older sister. I thought significantly older based on...
she's supposed to be in college.
Yeah, I thought she was like, because I didn't see any parents, so I thought she was like the older guardian, like fully employed, like supporting them. Older.
No, the parents were just in the background.
Yeah. So that's one. And it turns out that the year prior, when she was still in high school, she dated a 33-year-old pedophile handsome face, and is now like obsessed with him and hates her because she's the new young hot thing in his life.
And she's been giving Amy advice and acting like a really supportive friend, like even more supportive than the best friend. Cause she's like, she just lets her talk it out and isn't like, ew, he's old or anything.
Yeah.
So she's been like tricking Amy into coming to her for advice.
And like, she comes to Amy with advice on, or asking about the,
And no, Amy comes to her with advice.
Oh yeah. Sorry. Amy comes to her for advice the first time. And I remember writing this down, and this was my first clue that like, yeah, the sister's probably the one. Was she's like, oh yeah, this woman's stalking me. She like broke into my locker. She cut up my dress. She left a threatening note at my home. And her advice is, I'm sure this will just work itself out. And Amy's like, thank you for being so supportive.
Right?
That's the stupidest thing.
And she's like, wow, that was new. Like, you were so supportive. It's so stupid. And then the next time she goes to advice, like the girl, like the next couple times, like the sister is like, listen, you shouldn't be with him. And Amy tries to take that advice and like really tries to like distance herself from him. She keeps breaking up with him. She keeps telling him like, get the fuck away from me. Like, get out of my life. And, then Stalker doesn't stop. And then at the end, when Jen, the sister, does confront her, she's like, why couldn't you have just listened to me just once? And it's like, she listened to you throughout the movie. She tried to break up with him so many times.
She gets
the last two times she saw him, it was just because you continued to stalk her. And one, Derek used that to be like, oh, I have some news to tell you about the stalker. So he tricked her into seeing him, which stalker's fault. Number two was that the police weren't being helpful enough. So she was like, I have to lure the stalker out. So she has another meeting with him to lure the stalker out. Both of them would not have happened if he was stalking her. You're the problem.
But instead she gets like homicidal. She's like, oh, you're going to see him again? And she literally is like, yeah, I'm hoping to trick him because I find him so repulsive. I'm hoping to trick him into giving me the identity of the woman who's probably stalking me, because clearly she's crazy as well. And she just hears like, ah, she's going to go have sex with him again. It makes no sense. So hang on.
She does say to her, as long as you're around, he'll always want you. It doesn't matter if you like. Yeah. That was the only thing that somewhat justified her that level of crazy, where you're like, you're out of touch.
Now let's back up, because I want to get to order in my courtroom, because I think I was unfairly laughed at.
No.
Big twist. The way they reveal it is Amy. What was it that made her spend the night at her friend's place? Was it the sauna incident?
It may have been the sauna incident. No, was it the car? I think it was the car thing.
It was the attempt on her life, which we'll get into, but the stalker tried to kill her, like visibly tried to push her off a cliff with her car.
So the stalker stole the wife's Jaguar, used the Jaguar to try and push Amy in Amy's car off of a cliff. Right. With like a beam that said I'm sorry, Derek, Amy.
Yeah. Which great evidence for the police. That's clearly going to go in the water. Anyway,
I was thinking too.
So that happens. And Amy does not go home to her mother, who she can't buy attention from.
I was going to say she can't find.
She goes to her friend's place, her friend who parents have not been seen, our fully absentee older sister, who I thought was like way older because the movie doesn't do much to tell us she's a year older than her older sister or younger sister.
She does. They do.
Anyway, moving on.
At the beginning, they're moving the older sister back in, and Dana, the best friend, says, I thought she was going to go out, you know, move out and go off to college this year, but she decided instead of, you know, living at college, she's going to like move back in after just a few months.
Oh, I thought she like meant after graduating college.
But they didn't say that. They said she moved out for college.
Whatever. That's not my big point. So then the older sister, she or the younger sister says to Amy, like, hey, you're just going to sleep here tonight. Like, someone tried to kill you. You need some like girl time. We're going to have a sleepover. Amy is then sleeping alone in a bed, and the older sister comes in staring daggers at her, dumps out her purse. And by this point I had vocalized to you like, oh, I think the older sister is the stalker.
Yeah.
Amy or the older sister has dumped out
Amy's purse to her own room, then dumps it out.
That was not well staged.
Yes, it was.
No, hang on. This is order in my courtroom. So it looked to me like she, and I was watching the same movie you were, it looked to me like she went into the room, saw Amy asleep on her bed for whatever reason, took the purse, dumped it out, found perfume, smelled it, and then went over to a drawer in the same room where Amy was sleeping and like found a second bottle. And then she opened another drawer and she found the white lingerie. And I thought that I didn't fathom for a second that Amy would be asleep in the older sister's room. And I do not recall seeing any kind of cut where it made it seem like she took the purse to her own room. It looked like the older sister went into a bedroom where Amy was asleep by herself. Presumably Amy's home at this point. I don't know. Definitely not her bedroom. And then walked over to her cabinet and pulled out all of these clear hints that she too was sleeping with the other guy. So you laughed at me because I just assumed by the staging of this horribly directed scene that the older sister was in Amy's home going through her shit.
That makes no sense because Dana has said, you're going to sleep over here. Mm-hmm. Then we cut to Amy asleep in Dana's bed with Dana.
I did not see Dana in there.
We do see
she
Dana.
She was solo on that bed.
Then we see the older sister, I think Jen, take her purse.
Yes.
And then we see her in a different room that is now lights. Yes, yes, it is within a different room.
I should say, I believe you're correct.
I let you talk.
You're
you
right.
Let me talk.
You're right. Yes, ma'am.
We see her in a different room that is fully lit with lights on now. And a different bed. It was fully lit,
it's
yes.
The same room.
It's not. It's a different bedspread and it has lights on and no one is sleeping in the bed. And she pours out the contents of Amy's purse. A, because if she tried to do that on the bed where everyone was sleeping, the movie would be over because everyone would have woken up. It would have been weird.
That's what I thought.
So she pours it out on a different bedspread in a well-lit room that's clearly her own room, that's clearly the older sister's room where she has taken the purse in her own home. She pours out, she grabs the perfume from Amy's purse that has fallen onto the bed. She sniffs it and puts it on herself and then like erotically like moans and like rubs it on herself. Then goes to her own drawer and takes out a bottle of perfume that is identical and holds them up and looks at them and then puts them together on the counter on her dresser drawer. That's when Tyler goes, huh? And I said, like, get it?
Don't do that voice when you do an impression of me. That's
literally so goes, no. And then she takes out her own corset that's identical to the corset that that Derek had given Amy at the beginning. The older sister takes out her own one that looks identical. And I go, see? And Tyler goes, no, what?
Because I thought it was the same corset.
Rightfully so, because the slowest man in the world.
Excuse you.
This movie.
Absolutely excuse you.
Whereas like 13-year-old me put that got what was happening really easily, put that together, but apparently 33-year-old Tyler, no.
Objection.
That says it's like he needed like a picture of Derek with the older sister saying, "God, I'm glad I'm having this affair with you in the summer of 1995.
How dare you? I maintain, I believe, I will concede I'm wrong and you are right about the sequence of events as they exist within the reality of this movie. But I will say, I do believe it is not completely stupid to blame this movie's poor direction on how that scene was structured. That I'll be goddamned if that didn't look like the exact same room. If the dumping of the purse seemed like it was on the exact same bed and the same bedspread, all of that. I don't think this movie did a good enough job with the staging of that scene. First time we've seen that perfume, by the way.
I think the
movie, not like a touchstone of a gift that he'd given her.
I did think that their audience was so slow on the uptake that they were going to have her go, "I'm walking in the hallway now."
An insert would have helped. A different bedspread would have helped. A different lighting for the bedroom would have helped.
It was a different bedspread, and it was a different, like, the younger sister's room was, like, blue, and, like, the older sister's room was red.
Maybe you're right. Maybe I have to rewatch that scene, but what tripped me up was that it seemed like Amy was sleeping in the older sister's bedroom. I didn't get the shift from watching Amy sleep to now older sister is in her private headquarters doing weird shit.
Sleeping in the older sister's room.
I don't know. That led me to the conclusion I jumped to then was that like, this is a different night and Amy is home in her room, because why the fuck would she be alone in a bed where the white corset is in the drawer?
So many more steps that you'd have to take in your own dumb head to get there. Like, you're like, I guess this is a different night and that she's in her bedroom now, and that now the older sister of her best friend has broken into her house, rather than it being just the same night.
She's being revealed as a stalker who has broken into multiple places in
this
scene.
But you took like 18 different leaps. It's one leap. You're like, this is the next month, and they've since graduated from college, and
That's over the top. That's over the top. It's facetious, and I object. Frankly, I object. And I move to get this whole case thrown out. Try the director.
Because now you think that she's a lawyer, because we did a time jump to where now she's a lawyer.
You son of a bitch. Next segment. Favorite scene. Go.
Okay. So my favorite scene by far, was the scene where she's like, the Amy, our protagonist, is very paranoid about the wife. She's fully thinking the wife is the one stalking her and that her life is in danger. And she's broken up with Derek, and Derek is also now stalking her. So she got two stalkings happening at once. And she's for sure knows one is Derek, because Derek is openly stalking her. But the other, she thinks is the wife. So she is at she's at the school basketball game where she's a cheerleader. And then Derek is at the basketball game in the bleachers, staring daggers at her. Then the camera pans, and Derek's wife is in a different section of the bleachers, staring daggers at him. So it's like this weird triangle of just stalking happening. That really, I laughed out loud when that happened.
And like,
it was so funny.
Did they try to make us think that was like a hallucination or something? Because she looks away and looks back, and the wife is gone, and so is Derek.
No, I mean,
they're in the middle of bleachers. Have you ever tried to discreetly leave the middle of bleachers? It doesn't happen.
That means she had to have gotten just on the ground and like laid down because she didn't want to be seen.
She fell back like behind them, like in the faculty.
Yeah, but so that was my favorite. That and that she then like Amy then goes to the girls' locker room, because when she sees the wife there, she gets freaked out, and she's like, she hears it where all the for some reason that's where most of the stalking happens, is this fucking locker room. I guess because they had the set the most, maybe.
Yeah. But she works for the paper, too. She's not just a cheerleader. Like, film somewhere else.
Yeah, I know. But so she's in the locker room by herself, and she hears a noise, and she goes, "Mrs. Bradshaw?" And I thought that was funny. And then she's all scared, and she is trying, and the lights go out, and then she gets to the mirror and she sees like, I gave you a chance, now you die, or something like that is written in red lipstick on the mirror, which, like, considering that there's been like a previous murder attempt, not really that bad.
I mean, it's not great.
No, no. I mean, is it fun? Is it your best Friday night? No, but like, you know,
the whole
thing that happened that day is just to her writing a mean message on the mirror. I'm like, cool with it. Like, she tried to throw her into a truck, like, somewhat recently.
That's true. How did the sister know that Amy was going to get so flustered that she'd go to the locker room by herself?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Lifetime movie logic right there. It just is what it is.
In The Dark Knight, it's like so many things have to go right for certain things of the Joker's thing to go through. Man, that's, you know.
That's true. I guess if you start pulling at that thread, you lose the sweater.
Yeah.
My favorite, there were so many scenes in this movie. And again, I blame the director, who is now my enemy because of because it allowed you to dog walk me a moment ago over their bad direction of the reveal scene. But there were so many moments where it was like so clear that this was like Lifetime movie, made for TV movie, like directing. And it was just very clear flaws that like people like us shouldn't be able to, or people like me shouldn't be able to notice when you're making a film. For example, both times that they had to do their like high school cheer that entices pedophile Esquire. It's so clear that the cheer is choreographed around a camera being right where that camera is. They're doing like big like arm sweeps that if you're sitting in the crowd behind them are not visually stunning at all, but if you're a camera standing in front of them, yeah, it's like a big arm sweep thing and like a lot of seductive looks and things like that. But
I hate it, like voyeuristic, like up the skirts.
Yeah,
where you could see like the like cotton white panties that they were wearing that was like zoomed in on their ass cracks. I really hated that.
It putting us in like pedophile view. Like, yeah, not fun. But so I think what there was a lot of scenes where the director is so clearly a fan of close-ups. They cut back and forth to like sometimes extreme close-ups like here and there. And it made it so that there were several scenes where it was so clear that because of the way they wanted it shot, the two actors were not occupying the same space. There was clearly like one actor had conversation while the other read lines off a script, and then they just intercut them together poorly. And there was no place where it was more egregious than the scene on the lawn after he has like pretended to be interested in the house to meet her mother, and they're talking on the lawn, and it's an outdoor scene on a big open lawn, and yet they still insist on having like hard to camera close-ups. And there's so many like pauses and moments when they're talking that it's so clear they didn't run this scene as like a pair. They ran it one at a time and they cut it together. And it was like in a video game when you're like when like the people pause while you select what response option you want to have, the pause that happens there, that's how the scene played out. And it really made me laugh the whole time.
That was your favorite?
I think, yeah, it was just so clear, like the caliber of, maybe it was because we watched so many Oscar movies before then, but just to see the sweat on the filmmaker's brow in that scene was really entertaining to me.
You know, I did genuinely like when her mom went to confront him.
Yeah.
Finding out everything, because he tries to lie to the mom. He's all like, yeah, your daughter's been stalking me. Like, she won't take no for an answer. Like, she's got this crush on me. And I like that the mom's like, okay, like, you can maybe convince some jury or some 18-year-old girl with your bullshit, but I can tell you right now, like, I am not someone you want to mess with. And yeah. I like that she says, I am not someone you want to mess with.
And she says it right in his ear, too.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, is that a threat? And she's like, you can take it however you want. And then she like whispers to him like, but if you even breathe in my daughter's direction, like I'll get you or something like that, really appreciated. She was pretty badass in that moment where she was like, listen, weirdo who's been seducing my daughter, like you're done. I will kill you. Then she has nothing to do with the resolution of it. And
I think that's the mom's last scene.
Yeah. Well, no, she takes pictures of her at graduation, but so it's so weird to me. We did jump the gun a little because we haven't gotten through. The end is so weird to me because, so The older sister, Jen, ruins two cars that night, which I think is just egregious. She ruins her sister's car because her sister's like part of like the plan to like reveal who the murderer is. So she like just like does something in the car. Oh, she cuts the cords in the car so that it won't start. And then she like sets Amy's car on fire because her whole plan is that she's going to have Amy drive off the cliff and that'll seem like a suicide, even though her car is going to be filled with lighter fluid and an arson investigation would discover it was murder. But she's not thinking of that. She just wants Amy to blow up. And then she and Amy have a tussle. Amy helps her get out of the car when it starts heading towards the cliff, and then Amy's car explodes. And it's like, you've ruined two cars this night. Amy was very kind to her and is like, listen, I get it. You like, she's like, I just love him so much. And she's like, I get it. If anyone gets it, it's me. And it's like, really though? You know, you love him that much. But then it quick cuts to the graduation and Amy and her best friend Dana taking pictures. Her mom is taking pictures of them together. She and Dana are clearly going off to a party together. And it's like, Dana's older sister, Jen, tried to kill you. What happened to Jen? How is Dana so cool too? Like, Dana should be like, yeah, we're gonna go visit my sister in the sanitarium soon, or so, you know, something. Like, what has happened to Jen? How is Dana so well adjusted when clearly her sister's been going around town trying to murder her best friend? And why is Amy also not a little shook up that, you know, hey, somebody tried to murder me and I was having an affair with a married man? And then we do our last scene is fucking Derek going back to the stands for a football game to watch the new crop of even younger looking cheerleaders.
Yeah.
Like, looks like actual 15-year-old girls. And like, he's all happy now because his wife is divorced him. So he's poor and everything because it seemed like it was her money. But now he's good to just cheat. But
shot
not have
for
to
cheerleaders.
Cheat. Yeah. So he does not get his comeuppance in the end. If anyone deserved to be stalked and murdered or have attempts, at least it was Derek. But I guess that it was gross to me that he got no comeuppance. But what was so confusing to me is how happy Dana and Amy were at graduation when, like, what happened to Jen though?
Here's another thing that boggled my mind too, which is that after the attempt on her life, Amy tells her mother, and her mother's like, we're going to the police. And the police are like, well, look, there's nothing really to verify any of these claims, you know, we can look into it. And then they do bring in the wife and they're like, you know, this lady claims that she was attacked by a jaguar, like, you know, and she's like, oh well, I lost it. And then later
she even says, like, my car was stolen that night. Yeah. I reported it stolen. And they don't seem to think that that's kind of
suspicious
fishy
at all. They don't look into that at all. And the other thing that really blew my mind too is, like, when it came time for Jen to make her second attempt on Amy's life, she brings her to the same crime scene where the same graffiti that she was using to, like, make it look like a suicide was there. Like, that is hard proof that this happened and the police couldn't be bothered to drive up there.
Well, he did say that she could have, like, she was like, well, do you think I wrote it myself? And he was like, you said that, not me. So they wouldn't prove to them. To be fair, that was her third murder attempt on her because she did try to throw her when they were at the away game.
Oh, yeah.
Amy was like, oh, I'm going to go back on the bus, and instead just goes through a maze of trucks.
No,
like,
I take it back. That was my favorite scene because they show an establishing shot of the bus right in front of this restaurant. Amy and her friends are eating outdoors right in front of this restaurant. And then Amy's like, I'm going to go wait on the bus, and gets lost in a truck park.
In a maze of like 18 wheelers, yes. Not even like pickup trucks, like 18 wheelers, which, like, women, young girls especially, do not go, you know, hanging out at all of the 18 wheelers and truck stops. That is a great way to get sex trafficked. So don't do that. And she is wandering through them. They all keep trying to like reverse into her, which you have to imagine that can't be the stalker doing all of them. That's just people being bad drivers.
Yeah. At one point, a truck just like starts driving at her head on and she's like, and has to run. That's not the stalker. That's just a bad trucker.
Yeah. And then like three more like try to back into her, and the laziest murder attempt ever, she like shoves her, and then Amy manages to just move out of the way as anyone would, and somehow doesn't see the stalker. Though the stalker has disappeared.
Yeah, well, because they stage it really weirdly in that, like, she gets lost in the truck park and then proceeds to just start walking backwards.
Yeah,
I don't know. I think that's, I'm changing. That is my favorite scene, is the getting lost in the truck park. I've forgotten about that.
Inexplicably getting lost in the truck park. Like it's, I don't know why there's 18 wheelers.
Kind of courting danger, if you ask me. Like, yeah, I'm going to go to the front of the bus by going all the way around this seedy truck stop.
Yeah, let me cut through the backyard, even though it leading me away from, it was very confusing.
Yeah. If I'm in like her situation and there's clearly like a killer stalking me, and I find that my circumstances have broken such that I am alone at night, lost in a trucker park, I'm like, honestly, I got to hand it to my killer. They win. They've gotten me in a weird place. I'm in a spooky roller disco. Uh-oh. I'm in a graveyard. Ah, man, I blew it this time. Like, yeah.
I feel like the stalker was like, really? She let herself into this? Oh, okay. Happenstance.
She broke away from the group? I really thought stalking her tonight was going to be stupid. Like, she's not going to be alone. Yeah.
Serendipity strikes again.
Oh, man, that was a good one. That really got me. Okay. Are you ready for trivia?
Yes.
So as we mentioned, this was a made-for-TV movie. A lot of times we struggle to find good trivia for these movies. With that in mind, here we go. One thing I found out was that the actor, I'm probably going to struggle to pronounce his name, Vincent Irizarry. I know a lot of soap opera fans are probably pissed because he seems like a big deal in the soap opera world. But he is today 64 years old. The actress who played Amy, Cassidy Ray, is 47 years old. So that means their real life age difference is bigger than the age difference of their characters. They are 17 years apart in the movie. I believe they were 15, right? Something like that.
She was 18 and he was 33. So yeah.
Yeah. So if my math is correct, that means at the time of the filming of this movie, she was 19 or 20 and he was 35 or 36.
Okay. Yeah. Which
explains why every time they had to kiss, there was just something really gross about it. I wrote in my notes, it felt like in every scene where they had to make out, each was told to have a different level of intensity.
Well, yeah, he's very like, and she's like, you know, somebody that's kissing for the first time.
But then there are a couple scenes where that's reversed. And then there's a couple scenes where he's like not really giving it his all. And she seems to be like, it's their makeout scenes were weird. I did not care for them.
He looks like kind of a silver fox now. I think he looks more attractive in his current headshot on IMDb than he does in this movie.
Well, so he's a big, I guess, soap opera actor. I think he even has an Emmy based on a photo of him holding an Emmy. But he is Vincent Irizarry. He's by far the most recognizable actor, judging just by his IMDb credits. He's done hundreds of episodes of All My Children, hundreds of episodes of Days of Our Live, hundreds of episodes of The Young and the Restless. He is a huge soap actor.
He is an Emmy-winning actor, 4 times nominated.
Yeah. The working title for this movie, which I think this really would have cleared up a lot, Bed of Lies.
Bed of Lies?
Yeah, I'm joking. It doesn't clear up a lot at all. But
It makes more sense than Lying Eyes.
That's true. But it's still not amazing.
It is. Bed of Lies kind of just like the man who boned you in lies.
This was filmed in Cupertino, Palo Alto, San Jose, and at Los Gatos High School. So if you live in that area and you want to go to Los Gatos High School, you can see the hallowed ground where Lying Eyes was filmed.
Do you know what Los Gatos means?
Is it not the cats?
I'm pretty sure it means the cats.
Awesome. Their mascot? Falcons. That's a joke. the face you're giving me, you didn't like that one. In the UK, this movie didn't make it to the UK until 2004. And think about how dated it must have seemed by then.
I don't know. I feel like the UK, like, you know, because like a lot of things get like exported from the US and then like, from like cultural and other places. So maybe the UK is maybe like a year behind the US with some trends. Some trends we take from the UK. So I'm not trying to be a dick. We take a lot of their shows and we take a lot of their trends. But sometimes when we export them, it's like a year behind.
Yeah. Well, this was like 8 years. Cassidy Ray reunited with director Marina Sargenti, who directed a few episodes of the TV series Models, Inc., of which Cassidy Ray was a regular character, along with Carrie Ann Moss. And I remember seeing her on screen and being like, she could hold up to Carrie Ann Moss.
Really?
No, not really. And then the last bit of trivia I have here, because it kept coming up when I was doing my best to research this movie, there is a 1975 rock song performed by the Eagles titled Lion Eyes.
Okay.
That's it. That's the trivia. That's all I got.
I will say, so I talked about this with you last night because somebody had written it. Like, I was reading you some of the reviews that people had left on IMDb because I thought they were funny.
Very funny.
Somebody had a thought that I also did have, because there was a song used throughout the movie, Dreams by the Cranberries.
Yes.
And as soon as I heard it, I was like, how did they afford to license a Cranberries song? And then somebody wrote, like, I don't know how they got Cranberries in this. And I was like, yes, I also would like to know. So I'm disappointed you didn't find that.
I didn't know. I couldn't find anything on it. And I did look. And they clearly knew what a get it was, because they used that song so much. They used it every chance they could.
To be fair, they used it to illustrate, like, anytime like everything was like too good to be true, they like used it.
Yeah, which was a lot. And they used it in the end, I think. Yeah.
No, I don't know. It wasn't at the end.
It wasn't?
Oh.
Oh. Well, that's all the trivia I've got for this movie. And I think we covered as much as they're reasonable, if not more, than there is to cover when it comes to the 1996 made-for-TV movie Lying Eyes.
It seems like Cassidy Ray, I looked her up because I was trying to remember like if I'd seen her in other things. It seems like she did a few Lifetime made-for-TV movie type things.
Which, like, fine. She was, you know.
She's good for what this movie was.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. That's a diplomatic way to put it. Well, then I guess the heart of the question here is, Allie, would you recommend this movie?
I can and I will, and I do. I have.
To who? What audience are you recommending this to? Like, who are you?
Mallory.
Mallory Johns, our first guest on the podcast, who did a perfect murder with us.
Yes, because Mallory and I have watched Lifetime movies together, so she and I have similar taste in movies. So
okay, so Allie would recommend this to her one friend.
I have more than one friend.
Forgive me, let me rephrase.
My friends. One of my many, many friends.
She would recommend this to one of her many friends.
One of my hundreds of friends.
Anyway, I don't think I would recommend this one. I think this whole premise has been done better. I think there's so many. If you're a person who's like, I've exhausted every streaming service for romantic thrillers, what is one I should watch? I'm thinking of getting into the made-for-TV-averse. Where should I go? Then, yeah, maybe I would say Lying Eyes. But I, short of that situation, I can't imagine wasting any of my friends' time with this movie.
Is it because it was too hard for you to follow?
This has been Not Couple Goals. Thank you all.
You know what's funny, though, is that when
you can find me on Threads, and then my wife is doing some shit. I don't know.
When I found it on Amazon yesterday for us to watch, I had already watched it. Like, that's it was like start over from beginning, and I was like, oh, I already watched this one. Good for me.
And then when we said start over from beginning, Amazon Prime, the app, asked us, are you okay?
It was like, again? No, so that means I've seen it at least three times counting yesterday.
I think I've
seen it three times total, though. I'm going to be honest. Okay. I don't think I've seen it that many. I think I got it really, I wrote down the title the first time I watched it. And I do remember writing it down, being like, yay, Lying Eyes. And then I think I got excited when it appeared on streaming and watched it again. And then this was my third time.
Okay, wow. Do you think you'll go for a fourth?
Man, I don't know if someone wants to watch it with me. Like, aww. I would watch it. Like, if I did like a girls' night, like a girls and gays night or something, I would watch it.
Mal, if you're out there. All right. Well, for real, this was a fun one. I do have to go back and rewatch that scene. I'm just calling it now. I'm sure my wife is right. But Allie, where can the people find you?
You can find me. Don't look for a house with my name in front, because that's not how you shall find me. And that's not a thing people do, I don't think. But you can find me on the interwebs. I am on Threads and Instagram at Anal Retentive, AnelRetentive. You can find me on TikTok and YouTube at Like Willie Nelson. just like you think you would think it was would be spelled, like Willie Nelson. Although TikTok has been hampering my videos of late and saying that they are not original content when they are of my face and of me talking. So I'm a little angry at TikTok. So let's all get angry at TikTok with me. But I post little sketches, stand-up comedy, things like that on all of my social media. And I think those are the ones you can find. And you can also, you know, find my writing on parade.com. I write about entertainment, celebrity gossip, things like that.
Yes. And truly, I've been loving the stuff you've been putting out lately. If you're listening to this, I'm sure you follow shittier people than my wife on TikTok. So improve your followers list with my hilarious and amazing wife, who I love very much. And I'm confident you will, too. You can find me on Threads at Tyler McCarthy. I'm trying to be the most active there. And you can find a lot of the stuff I'm working on across all the NBC Universal editorial websites. So go check it out. We're doing a lot of fun work over there. So, and you can hear me on the 200th episode of the Socially Distanced podcast, drafting a Dream Avengers team with a lot of really fun nerds. It was a really fun episode. And I just want to say congrats to everyone at the Pop Break and the Socially Distanced podcast. 200 is a cool milestone, and it was a real treat to be a part of it. So please go listen to that. And yeah, that's it for this one.
Special thanks to the divine Mallory Johns for our intro and outro music.
And the similarly divine Alex Marcus for who's our producer.